Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? It's the Hardcore Preterist Icon. Check out my website, my blog, hardcorepreteristicon.wordpress.com. We're going to get right into it. So let's bring him on over. We got Adam Marshall. Great guy. Met him last week. I've actually followed his works for probably about a good half a year, and I'm just intrigued with his blog. And he's got tons of information on preterism. And I think he's fair and balanced also. He talks about other views, but really phenomenal job. And I have it up in the description box here, adammarshchalk.com. And Adam, are you there?
I am here. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing great. So, Adam, from adammarshchalk.com, check it out after this episode's over with. And a lot of great information. If you're kind of on the fence, you're confused about preterism, you're doubting your own eschatology, please go to that website. I mean, I agree with Pastor Miano when it comes to when you type in anything in regards to preterism, you are like the top five or at least the top ten that comes up in the Google section. So I think that's awesome. And that's how I come across yours, by typing in preterism, anywhere from preterism to eschatology. Eschatology, amillennialism, everything, but mostly preterism. If you type that in, preterism, whatever you want to look up in preterism, Adam comes up. So, Adam, the question that I want to start off with, and this relation to Matthew chapter 24, verses 1 through 3, and like I say in my blog, how you interpret the three questions that's mentioned in Matthew 24, since everybody loves to go to Matthew 24, how you interpret that will really dictate your eschatological future and ultimately change your life. So, but before we get into that part, we see Jesus talking about the temple. And my first question is, what did the temple mean to the Jews? How big was this?
Of course, we know that the first temple was destroyed by Babylon in 586 BC. And so for a period of 70 years or so, they didn't have a temple. There was great mourning. It was tragic. And the movement to rebuild the temple began around 516 BC. And it became the pride and joy of the Jewish people. It was their cultural center, their life. It provided the means to obey the old covenant commands of the law and so forth. But first of all, it's interesting to note that the movement to begin to rebuild it began in 516 BC. Of course, it was destroyed the first time in 586 BC, and it was 586 years later, in 70 AD, that it was destroyed the second time. But one thing that was going on in the decades before Jesus predicted its collapse around 30 AD when he was talking to the disciples, is that Herod the Great conducted a massive expansion project on the temple. It had been going on for 46 years. Josephus, according to Wikipedia, Josephus says that Herod wanted to perpetuate his name and his legacy through building projects, and his masterpiece was the Temple of Jerusalem. So throughout the region, there were other projects going on, but the biggest one was the Temple of Jerusalem. And history tells us that the expansion project began in 19 BC. The renovations continued until 65 AD, which was only 5 years before it fell in 70 AD. Herod used architects from Greece, Rome, and Egypt. The Temple Mount was 9 stories high. The stones that Jesus talked about that were going to be cast down, not one would remain standing. The stones weighed anywhere from 28 tons to about 600 tons each.
Man.
The court of the Gentiles alone. Yeah, they're huge, heavy. The court of the Gentiles alone could accommodate 400,000 pilgrims during the major feasts. And that wasn't the entire temple complex, but just the court of the Gentiles alone could hold 400,000 people coming from different nations for the major festivals. And a Roman historian and senator by the name of Tacitus, who lived from 56 to 117 AD, said that the second temple, was famous beyond all other works of men. That was his testimony. So beyond anything else in the entire Roman Empire, which was the known world at that time, that temple was famous beyond all other works of men. So huge. And of course, ever since the temple was destroyed in 70 AD, the religion that we know as Judaism has never been the same, not even close. It's been impossible to follow most of the Old Covenant laws without that temple. And it's also why Talmudic Judaism, or the Babylonian Talmud, was created between roughly 100 AD to 300 AD.
Because Old Covenant Judaism couldn't carry on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to add something, and I find it interesting. You talked about how the expansion from 19 BC all the way up to 65 AD, right? That's a long time.
Yeah.
And so I'm amazed that, and I'll admit that I was like this too, but saying this now from a preterist perspective, it's like I just don't see how futurists, those are the pre-trib believers, that will see a seven-year great tribulation. And then some will try to fit the rebuilding of the temple in the beginning of the 3.5 years. There's no way you can build that in 3.5 years.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
All right.
I mean, yeah, because that was just expansion. Of course, the temple, it was inferior to the first temple, but that temple had been built over, I don't know how many years, under Zerubbabel, Ezra, Nehemiah, you know, that building project after the...
Right.
After the Jews were released to go back by, was it Artaxerxes of Persia? So, yeah, I mean, a number of years have been put into building it in the first place, and then the expansions, you know, carried on for decades. So, yeah.
I mean, it's not something you can just do, you know, in a year. I mean, it's a lengthy process, because if you're going to do it, you're going to do it right. You're going to put a lot into it, because, like you said, like you were just stating, that this was their lifehood, right? The Jews.
Oh, yeah.
This was their lifehood. This is something that kind of reminds me of, was it 1 Samuel with Eli? You find out that his sons died, and he was more concerned about the Ark of the Covenant. And when he found out the Ark of the Covenant was gone, he fell back and broke his neck and died. His daughter-in-law, who was having a baby, someone told her, hey, you know, your husband died and your father-in-law died. What about the Ark of the Covenant? She was more concerned about that. And so likewise, this was it. This was it. So, all right. So with that being said, I just don't see how Jesus is going to answer the three questions that you find in Matthew 2, that you find in Mark and Luke, but to answer them in such a way where he is going to downplay 70 AD and then upplay a rebuilt temple and then the Jews that return and all this other stuff that dispensationalists like to use. So let's go to those three questions. How should we approach the three questions in Matthew? And my computer just started acting up.
Okay.
And are those three questions, I was going to pull up something from my computer. So, and are those three questions in Matthew all related to 70 AD or the future? Go ahead.
All right. Tackling the first question, how should we approach the three questions in Matthew 24:1-3? Well, I want to contend that we need to approach it by looking at all three accounts together. And looking at all three accounts, we see the same basic framework. Number one, initially, Jesus' disciples make remarks about the temple. They're admiring it. They're just amazed at the structure. Number two, they're shocked when Jesus responds that it will be completely destroyed. And then number three, they follow that up with either one question or some say three questions, which leads to the rest of the discourse. So... I hope our listeners have a Bible in front of them and can look up at least one of the accounts. But in Mark's account and Luke's account, we see that the disciples simply said, "Wow, so when is the temple going to fall, and what will happen before the temple falls?" But that's it. I'll read verbatim here what they said in that account. Mark and Luke are pretty much identical. Mark 13:4. So after Jesus told them that temple is going to be destroyed, they said, "Tell us, when will these things happen, and what will be the sign that they are all about to be fulfilled?" Luke 21:7 likewise says, "Teacher, when will these things happen, and what will be the sign that they are about to take place?" So in these two accounts, at least, there's no doubt that it's this question which Jesus spends the next 25 or 26 verses answering. When is that going to happen, and what all is going to lead up to it happening? And as you said, they're not talking about a possibly rebuilt temple 2,000 years later. No, they just admired that 9-story tall structure, the wonder of the entire Roman world, and then heard Jesus say that it was going to be thrown down. So
Let me insert something real quick. I'm amazed, though, including I at one time, so let me trash myself here, that we just assume.
Me too, I know what you're going
to say. We just assume that's a rebuilt temple. We assume that everything's kicked down the road. It's another gap. It's just another gap, and we kick it down the road. And some dispensationalists would take it and say, well, question one is not even answered at all. Some will say question one is actually answered in Luke 21:20-24 about Jerusalem being surrounded by armies, as if that's a separate event from Matthew 24:15. And so, it's just crazy. I'm just pointing out once again, it's just crazy. And I'll admit that I believe in some craziness, and it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense because you would be tripping. You'd be tripping up the disciples. Jesus would literally be. They're asking one thing, and then Jesus is going to be like, well, I'm just going to talk about something else and expect them to know. There's just no way he's going to do that. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, thanks. And others, of course, point to a dual fulfillment, saying that it was partially fulfilled in 70 AD, but will be ultimately fulfilled again in our future. I've heard that too. So
crazy.
We know, though, that the temple that they were looking at was destroyed in 70 AD, 3.5 years into the Jewish-Roman War, which began in late 66 AD or perhaps in February of 67 AD when Nero declared war on Israel. And there was a terrible 5-month siege in 70 AD, and then the temple was destroyed. That happened 1,946 years ago, if Jesus was telling the truth, and he was. I'm saying that prophecy was fulfilled that long ago, 1,946 years ago. And I'll get to Matthew in a second here, but Jesus even gave another bookend at the end of his discourse in all three accounts. In Matthew, Mark, and Luke, he says, "Assuredly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things happen." So everything that he goes on to explain and prophesy in the next 25, 26 or so verses, he says all of that will happen in this generation, not that generation 2,000 years later, but this one, our generation.
Whoa. You're saying that this generation doesn't really mean this generation. It means that generation if you're dispensationalist. It's sort of like if I told you, hey, I'll be over your house in 5 minutes. I don't really mean 5 minutes. I mean 20 years. Or I mean 1,000 years.
Yep.
And what you're saying is because a lot of those dispensationalists will take that and say, well, when he speaks about this generation, it really means when these things are being fulfilled and it becomes that generation. But then again, we've seen, like, for example, Hal Lindsey and Tim LaHaye back in the 1970s, and they all, and TBN, let me add them, they took 1948 as if that was the biggest thing in the world, and 1948, add 40, right, takes you to 1988. Nothing happened. So we have people getting their eschatology from newspapers, and you can't really accurately say that we're really in the last days of the last days if you're a dispensationalist. You're just going to be constantly making things up. But what you're trying to point out is that when Jesus says this generation, he means this generation, because didn't he also speak in the book of Luke, I think chapter 16 or chapter 17, and he says that about himself going on the cross and how he's going to be rejected by this generation. He wasn't rejected 500
yeah.
years later. He didn't die 500 years later. He died in that generation. Go ahead.
Right. He used the phrase this generation multiple times. And when I was a dispensationalist, I was content to accept that in every other case, he did mean his own first century generation. But I made an exception when it came to the Olivet Discourse. Suddenly the meaning changed. All of a sudden it meant, in my mind, that generation. I'm just, that must be what I did with that. Inconsistency. So going on to Matthew now, it is only in Matthew's account, one out of three accounts, that the disciples, some say, appear to ask two additional questions. They seem to ask about Jesus coming, or they do ask about Jesus coming in the end of the age. The question we have to ask is this: are those questions related or unrelated to the question that appears in all three accounts, which is, when will this happen, talking about the temple falling, when will this happen and what will be the sign? Here's what Matthew's account says in 24, verse 3. Tell us, when will this happen and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? All right, so since this is Matthew's account and he has a specific audience, scholars say that Matthew was writing very specifically to a Jewish audience, a Hebrew-minded audience. Let's look at the big picture of Matthew's account where Jesus had previously spoken about his coming. Did he give a time frame earlier on when he spoke about his coming? Yes, he did. Matthew 10:23. When they persecute you in one town, flee to the next, for truly I say to you, you will not have gone through all the towns of Israel before the Son of Man comes. That's Matthew 10:23. Clearly his coming is tied to the lifetime of the disciples. You, my 12 disciples, will not pass through all the towns of Israel before I come. Also in Matthew 16:27-28, this is 6 days before the Transfiguration, Jesus says, for the Son of Man is going to come with his angels in the glory of his Father, and then he will repay each person for what he has done. Truly I say to you, there are some standing here who will not taste death until they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. Again, tied to the lifetime of the disciples, he tells him, some of you will still be alive when this happens. And what did he say would happen? Four components or four aspects to his coming. Number one, coming with his angels. Number two, coming in the glory of his Father. Some scholars of different persuasions say that that means coming as his Father had come in the past. The third aspect is that he would come in judgment to repay everyone for what they had done. And the fourth aspect is that he would come in his kingdom. And it's interesting that in the book of Revelation, we see one example after another of the angels pouring out judgment upon the great city, also known as Babylon the Great, also known as the harlot. But this great city was first identified in Revelation 11:8 as the place where our Lord was crucified. And that's obviously Jerusalem. So there we see in the book of Revelation, the Lord coming with his angels in judgment. And of course, it's also proclaimed that the kingdom has come. So the only time frame that Jesus ever gave his disciples in the book of Matthew for his coming was their own lifetime. So it makes sense that when we come to the Olivet Discourse and the disciples ask this question, right after he talks about the temple falling, in Matthew's account, for some reason, they don't say what will be the sign that this, the temple falling, is about to happen. Instead, they use different language. What will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? And There's not one instance in the book of Matthew prior to the Olivet Discourse where Jesus talked about a coming thousands of years removed from the lifetime of the disciples. No, it would be in their time. So that's their frame of reference. And the end of the age, which age was it? Well, it was the age in which the temple was central to all things. That's the Old Covenant age. And looking at the rest of the New Testament, one key verse is Hebrews 8:13, where it says that the Old Covenant was already obsolete, yet it was becoming obsolete and would soon vanish away. And from that time onward, until now, we have only the New Covenant age made with better promises, as Hebrews 8 also says. I want to read a quote from the famous Thomas Newton. He was a well-known English cleric, scholar, and author. In the year 1754, he made this commentary about this passage in Matthew 24:1-3. He said, "The coming of Christ and the conclusion of the age, being therefore only different expressions to denote the same period with the destruction of Jerusalem. The purpose of the question plainly is, when shall the destruction of Jerusalem be, and what should be the signs of it?" So your question was, how do we approach these three questions in Matthew? I want to suggest that this is one of two instances in the Olivet Discourse where two accounts bring clarity to the third. For example, you already mentioned it, I think Matthew and Mark later on speak of the abomination of desolation. And Jesus said, "When you see the abomination of desolation, flee to the mountains. Don't even go down from your rooftop and take your clothes, but flee." In Luke's account, he says, "When you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, flee. Don't waste time, just flee." So the response is the same. Therefore, we know that Luke shows us that the abomination of desolation has to do with and is completely related to Jerusalem being surrounded by armies. So two accounts are given clarity by a third. I think the same thing is true here when we compare Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Like you said, futurists like to focus only on Matthew 24, don't even want to look to or compare Mark 13 and Luke 21 when it comes to this question that starts the Olivet Discourse. But Mark and Luke do bring clarity in the same way.
Totally agree. And everybody
so
wants to go ahead.
Oh no, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead with your summary.
Okay. Yeah, I was just going to say, in summary, many people look to Matthew 24:1-3 and say the disciples asked Jesus about two to three separate events, and that Jesus explained what would happen in at least two separate time periods separated by a couple thousand years. But the truth is that the parallel accounts in Mark and Luke do not support this idea, and this idea is also not supported in Matthew when we actually examine the time frame that Jesus gave in every other instance when he spoke about his coming.
All right. A lot of people that's listening to this that are obviously full preterists understand that what you have talked about, some of the things I've talked about, but there's going to be some that's listening live or by replay, archive, however you want to word it. They're going to be confused and say, "What in the world are you saying that Jesus came back?" You know, I would recommend everyone go to adammarshtalk.com. It's in the description box. And Adam, how long have you been doing this? What, 7 years now? You've been doing it for quite a while.
The blog? About. Yep. Started in 2009.
Can I tell you what?
August 2009.
Very extensive, by the way. You've already done your own commentary through Revelation, so people can look at that, and you break it down step by step, along with all of the discourse. You break that down. So the things that Adam is mentioning, that has mentioned in this broadcast, once again, you can read it, study it, and if you got questions, you know, they can send you an email through your WordPress or whatever, that you have there.
Yeah, or
that's I think
or,
that's how I got a hold of you. Or a comment. Yeah, just go ahead.
Yeah.
If you I go from WordPress to Facebook, and then you know we got to finally meet last week, and it was an awesome conversation. And you know I'll tell you what, it's amazing how much you can learn sitting down, having some coffee, having an open mind. And man, it was a great conversation. It felt like an hour, but we were there 4 or 5 hours. But
I know. I enjoyed it as well.
Yeah. and let me say this, and, you know, Adam is one of many, especially with his blog, really got me, like, studying deeper. So, like you said, people, if you're kind of on the fence or you're confused about your eschatological belief, please go to his website. Check it out. If you got questions, ask. Don't hold it in. Don't get defensive. Just ask a question. See where Adam's coming from. See where I'm coming from. There's many others. Pastor Michael Miano, if I said that correctly. Hopefully I said that correctly. Don't get mad at me, Pastor Mike, and you're listening. check him out on YouTube. Great debates. Just research. So they're coming up on 3.5 minutes. Adam, I appreciate you coming on the broadcast. I wish I had more time. Definitely would love to have you in the future, and we'll just continue on from Matthew or wherever the Lord may lead.
Yeah. I'm definitely open to that. I appreciate it, brother.
Appreciate it, man.
Yeah. Do you want me to say anything to the third question? I didn't have a whole lot.
Oh, okay. You got about a little over 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. Basically, you asked, are the questions in Matthew all related to 70 AD or to the future? And I just want to quickly say they're not related to our future. They are all related to 70 AD or, and this is important, the 40-year period leading up to 70 AD. Of course, we know that the disciples asked him, what is the sign that the temple is about to fall? Or when is the temple going to fall? And what are the signs that will show it's going to happen? And so, of course, everything he goes on to say is an answer to the question about what will happen between the time he spoke these words in 30 AD until 70 AD. Just a couple of quick examples. Jesus warned that famines would take place before the temple would fall, and history tells us that a huge famine took place in Babylon in 40 AD. Another severe famine in Judea, beginning in 45 AD, which was predicted by Agabus in the book of Acts. Another one in Rome in 65 AD, and of course the terrible famine during the siege in Jerusalem in 70 AD. Also, of course, Jesus said that the gospel would be preached to all nations, and that also took place over those 4 decades. And the truth of that is affirmed in Acts 2:5-11, Romans 1:8, Romans 16:25-26, Colossians 1:5-6, and Colossians 1:23. Of course, all those details are on my blog. If somebody wants to look at the Olivet Discourse, all they have to do is go to adamarshak.com, and there's a page that's titled Olivet Discourse. The top 4 posts are a 4-part series breaking down Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21 in a parallel fashion. A lot of details there.
It is. You're thorough, and I appreciate that. You've done a lot of hard work, and man, check it out, guys. Huh? What's that?
Fun work. It's been fun and rewarding.
Yes. Adam, appreciate you coming on. Thank you for your insight, and we'll have you on again.
All right. It's been fun, brother. Thank you.
Right on. God bless. All right. So I got about 49 seconds left. You heard it. Check it out. Also, go to my website, hardcorepersicon.wordpress.com. I'm the crazy one. I have a lot of humor, so please, like, understand it. And so I'll post random things. I even paint, so you see some of my paintings. Like, they're really awesome paintings. That's not mine. Rest of them are mine. Other than that, when it comes to the next broadcast, just check back. And who knows who may be on next. Other than that, have a great and safe 4th of July weekend. God bless.